Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. This week's episode, the guys talk about the difference in experience when buying with a new home builder versus buying a resale home, and how the Trump tariffs could be affecting new build home prices and how you may be able to capitalize, all while sipping and reviewing a whiskey that was born right here in Colorado Springs, 13th century American single malt whiskey. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Fathom Realty and Keller Williams Downtown. As always, we're sponsored by the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro down here in Greenwood Village off of I-25. Come check it out. But my name is Charlie Sardelli, and I'm here with
James Namros
and Oscar Ibarra.
And we have a fun topic for you today.
We do.
As you guys know, it's a real estate-based podcast. We talk about the market. We talk about how you can best capitalize on that market and just try and teach you things every once in a while about real estate. But we also drink bourbon.
And you guys never listen.
I don't know. We've had a couple people reach out.
There's also a couple people reach out about getting their USD dot to Binance bullshit.
Did you like my comment?
Yeah.
My response?
Yeah.
Did you see that one? Somebody commented on the YouTube channel, and it's like, man, I love your podcast, but how do I switch my ByteDance cryptocurrency from this over to this? And I covered it. I was like, did you try unplugging it and plugging it back in again? But thank you guys so much for all your comments and all the support that you've given us. We have some events coming on at the Rouge. The Rouge has some specials going on, so stay tuned for that information. Follow us on Instagram at the Mile High Perspective. We'll post all of our events, all that kind of stuff up there, as well as the YouTube and TikTok. So feel free to check that out. But like I said, we don't only talk about real estate. We drink bourbon and whiskey on this podcast.
One more thing. So I surprisingly get the, hey, we follow you and we like your podcast. And if you watch and you follow and you watch the podcast, subscribe. It helps us out. Because I know for a fact they're not.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, we need more subscribers. I mean, we're not asking for $100,000 from you guys. Just a quick subscribe and then
100,000 subscribers.
I mean, I'm not going to say no for the money, but you know, 100,000 subscribers would be cool. You know, let us know that we're doing something here.
If you want to crowdfund us,
I mean, in person, gratification. You know, hey, I follow you and the podcast is cool. That's cool and all, but hey, shoot us a subscribe.
In all honesty, how cool would it be to actually have like a follower subscriber on the channel that asks us questions from your perspective?
Yeah.
I think that would be sick.
I mean, we tried the whole live thing, but that was kind of complicated.
Yeah, we're going back.
We're going to get back to it.
We'd have to film the podcast like primetime hours when people aren't working.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're working and commenting, I mean,
hey, we're just here to give you a good time.
I'm not going
to
tell your employer.
But on today's episode, we actually have a really special single malt whiskey that we're drinking today. This is a whiskey by 13th Century, and they are actually a Colorado Springs-based distillery. They're actually right at the foot of Pikes Peak. And if you're not from Colorado, anytime you're driving south on I-25, that big mountain that's just up there in the back with the snow on top of it most of the year, that's Pikes Peak.
People know where the Broadmoor is. So
okay.
It's
over. My daughter calls it the Snow Mountain.
The Snow Mountain?
The Broadmoor is at the base of it as well. So I wonder how far they are from the Broadmoor.
Maybe they're doing it with the Broadmoor. But, I mean, just the bottle alone, you guys saw it on the video, it's like hand-blown glass. There's actually a structure inside the bottle.
Yeah.
It's incredible. But this single malt whiskey that we're going to be drinking is going to be sitting right at around 65%, so 130 proof. Really cool how they make this. I'm going to go ahead and pour it out. Jameson or Oscar, you want to talk about it?
I mean, I don't know what else to say other than anytime you have something barrel proof, you're in for a ride. And at 65.5%, it's essentially 132 proof, right? And we've talked about cask strength before. Basically, what they do with these... this whiskey, which is very unique, is they use rare 30-gallon barrels.
That's what I would say.
Which are smaller than your standard.
Do we know what the gallon barrels are on the just normal?
Ooh. I can find out if you want to keep talking.
Because 30 gallons is smaller.
Right.
I heard you talking about they char it like a million times or
what's
going on? They char it and then they char it again and then they char it again.
Yeah, so it's actually, we talked about this a little bit before, but some whiskeys and bourbons actually use different levels of char on their barrels.
53 gallons is the standard barrel size. So this is almost half.
Yeah, almost half. That'd
be cool to see. I'll see if we can find a side-by-side comparison to throw it up on the screen for you guys.
Also
so
be cool if we had somebody that like dealt in barrels that we could actually have as a guest on the show.
Right, and what's the purpose behind that? I'm sure that there's a purpose behind it.
Maybe we'll make that happen next week.
Who?
I got a buddy.
Oh,
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And then a little bird.
So we'll ask him.
Little birds, they need to speak up sometimes. Well, man. I've got a lot
going on. We'll ask Noah if he can come on.
But I'm excited.
So 30-gallon barrel, so half the size of a standard, which to me means it interacts, more of the bourbon interacts with the wood, mm-hmm. right? And it's levels 2, 3, 4, and 5
char.
Which the only thing we don't know is how, I would assume it's a year per barrel. That would make sense.
Age if it's a minimum, right? Do the first year in a regular barrel. And
then, yeah, and what is the vintage on this?
The what?
The vintage.
I mean, how many? How long did it sit?
Five years.
5 years.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, I would venture to guess that 5 years, multiple chars, small barrel. This thing should have a ton of character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. 100%. Like a ton of character. Mm-hmm. It is also interesting, and I don't know if it's because it's glass blown, but Chris mentioned this. The glass itself is very thin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, very thin.
When you gave it to me, I was like, this feels expensive.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I don't know if that's...
I'm going to see if I can get a shot. We'll do like a shot afterwards.
It's cool, though. I mean,
To have a glass structure inside the bottle itself. Yeah.
And the structure, awesome. What's the structure for the people?
It's a well.
Huh? Right?
It's a well.
No, yeah, it's a...
distilling pot?
Yeah, it's a pot distiller.
Yeah, okay.
It looked like a keg.
Yeah, it's a
like
pot distiller.
Like a keg. Tap the top part.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's a pot distiller.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How cool would that be if they just stuck it on top of it and just morphed it?
I mean,
I feel very classy.
It's hard. I mean, I don't know how hard it is. I'm not a glass blower, but I've seen Blown Away on Netflix.
Yeah.
And man, I mean, it's hard to get just a structure, but a structure within a structure. That's talent.
I always like, you always like clench up whenever they tink it off the end of the cap. You're like, oh,
my,
shit.
My East Coast days when I lived in Virginia Beach, mm-hmm. we used to go to Jamestown all the time.
Yep.
And they would have, like, the people that are churning butter, like, the olden times. Yeah. But there was, my favorite place to go was the glass blowing exhibition.
Yep.
And they would come in there, and they'd be like, do you want a bowl? I'm like, sure, I want a bowl. And then, bam, all of a sudden, like, fire's flowing everywhere, and this dude's blowing on a giant pipe. And then 20 minutes later, I got a fucking glass bowl in my hand.
Yep. That's cool.
I'm like, wow, this is sick. Crazy.
It's sick. I always wanted to get into glass blowing.
I always like watching, like, tradesmen. Or, like, when they pull taffy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's fun.
Saltwater taffy. That's another East Coast
thing. Saltwater taffy is great. I don't like chewy stuff in my teeth, but saltwater taffy is great. Mm-hmm. The Hammond's Candy Company's here off of 56.
Yeah.
And you could watch them pull candy cane.
All right.
So they have a machine that pulls it, too. So
I'm talking about candy. This is 100% malted barley.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's a single malt.
Yeah, so. Single malt, 100% malted barley. And let's go ahead and get our noses in it.
Thank God, though, because at
65%. Yeah. We're going to need something.
Oh, buddy.
All right. I'm going to get my nose in it. Cheers.
Salute.
Let me see. Yeah, it's burning.
Is it?
Not for
65%.
It's, the alcohol scent is there, but it's not like burning my nostrils. Does that make sense?
It's not, dude.
No, I don't. I mean,
I smell it, but I'm not burning.
I think my brain's telling me it's there because it's like, bro, this is 65%.
But yeah, we're ready for it.
Yeah.
God damn you, Jameson.
What?
I fucking hate you right now.
What did I do?
My brain operates kind of weird. Fabulous brain. You said Virginia, and I was like, I had all these thoughts, and now I just got. God damn, may you rest in peace, John Denver, West Virginia, Mountain Mama.
Right, I said Virginia Beach, all right? West Virginia is not.
Virginia, period. Okay. It's Virginia, that's where it went to. I've been out in the country, so that song came up a few times.
That sweetness is so prevalent for the single malt. It's got like a...
candied almonds.
Yep.
Vanilla.
Okay.
Like a cinnamon spice to it. Reminds me almost like a hard candy.
Yeah, there's a little bit of black licorice in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's there's a little bit of earthiness, kind of like cucumber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cucumber watermelon kind of scent.
Well, normally single malt tends to be a little earthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say the wood, 100%. Yeah. Like, that is the sugar of oak.
Yep.
Of a white oak.
No doubt. But it's like fresh cut wood.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. And it's that sweetness from it.
Mm.
All right, well, I'm gonna go ahead and get this sip in first. Let's see. Hold on. What are the nose notes on this guy?
Also, if you guys look at the legs on this thing, they don't move.
Or even the color. The color is like a reddish.
It's beautiful.
It's a reddish amber.
It's like a ruby amber color. Yeah. This gorgeous.
You know what it looks like? It looks like what's that? Is it a lager? The red.
Oh yeah.
Killian's red or whatever.
Something like that.
Back when I was a beer drinker, I did like some Killian's Irish Red.
Yeah. That was good.
I love the color on this. So the nose is herbal aromas with cinnamon. oak, yep. and butterscotch.
Okay.
Boom, spot on, baby. Yep.
Let's butterscotch. Get it. That
Let's
is.
Get it. Let's get it. All right. Tastes. Here we go.
Very what dry. The fuck
is Whoa. That?
Huh. We may have found one of the most dangerous bourbons ever created.
Wild. You know what I got hit with right up is like a cinnamon, like a hot tamale.
Mm-hmm.
Cinnamon candy.
I feel the chest hairs growing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like it punches you.
Oh yeah.
But
Oscar, I feel like this is right up your wheelhouse, dude.
Yeah, yeah. This is good.
It's like this is. I feel like out of all of the ones that we've drank, this one is like right there. It's checking all your boxes just right up front.
It better this not be affordable because I'm gonna call this in trouble.
In honor of my boy Steph Curry, this is a night night bourbon.
Yeah, night night.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
You know, I have a love hate relationship with bourbon because I like it and I drink it, but I drink it not like we drink it, not like other non-bourbon drinkers. And I could drink the hell out of some bourbon, and that's the problem. And it's not.
Well, it's what is it? It's like I love drink. It's I think this is a cocaine reference, a cocaine quote overall.
Easy, but, Eric Clapton.
But it's something along the lines of the problem is.
Damn, this is sweet.
I take a sip of bourbon, and then I like that bourbon, and then the next version of myself drinks another sip of bourbon, and he likes that bourbon, and then it just keeps going.
What's up?
That's true.
I found myself putting myself in the category of what's that new series with Billy Bob Thornton?
Landman. Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I'm not drinking. I'm drinking this beer. And he's like, well, it's still alcohol. He's like, all right, let me come back. Let me drink what I drink in beer and whiskey, and then come back the next day, drink the beer, and you tell me if it's not there's not a difference. It's like, if I'm not going to drink, I'll drink a beer.
Yeah.
I can only handle like 2-3 beers, and then I'm full and I'm done.
Yep.
I could drink like 2-3 pours.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wrecked. I don't know about if I keep going.
I don't know if I could do 2-3 pours. Okay, I could physically drink them. I don't know if I could walk away.
I will absolutely enjoy 2-3 yeah. pours of this. Now, my coherency. So I'm saying
it's a night night bourbon.
Yeah,
I won't be as coherent.
You got 3 pours. It's night night.
This is the kind of bourbon that you pour if you're going to have one pour in great conversation. If you pour and going to have fun, it's going to socialize. You got to pour your bourbon and give out the disclosure. What I do and say. After my second pour of this bourbon, you take it up with drunk Oscar, not with sober Oscar.
Just have a like a little QR code, man, as like a waiver. Yeah. Just have everybody sign.
So okay, so are you guys getting a lot of sour?
Yes, on the very tip of the tongue.
Yep, a lot of sour.
I'm getting a lot of sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting
sweet. I'm getting sweet in the back, but I'm getting sour on the very tip.
But not like sugar sweet, like honeysuckle.
Yeah.
You know, a natural like, agave almost.
That's what I mean. You can 100%. Tell the different chars that it went through, because I feel like what we're tasting, and you yep. said it was dry, and I've said this before, it's almost as if you took like a doctor's wooden little thing that they stick on your tongue,
the
palate popsicle stick thing, and you put it on your tongue.
Yeah,
but it was white oak. Like that's what I'm getting from.
But that sour mash, like I mean, it's not even a sour mash because wow.
there is no sour.
But
in
that
it.
Sour wow. is hitting wow. the tip of my tongue.
Yeah,
and I've got the charcoal and the vanilla kind of on the roof of my mouth, and in the back I've got that cinnamon, that spice.
All right, where are you getting the sour?
The very tip
all
of the tongue.
All the front.
At the front.
All yeah, the front.
All the way the front.
And it's not like a sour flavor. It's just that the front of my tongue is
tart,
bitter?
Drying out,
yeah. like tart. Yeah. yeah. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That
yeah.
makes sense.
And yeah. then yeah, the back end. It's weird with the it's a different kind of, like what you're saying, a different kind of sweetness with it. Like it is the oak, like the wood sweetness. It's not the there's no
like maple
malted
syrup,
barley
sugar?
In this.
Right.
So it's like you're not getting that sugar.
Right.
It's the actual like wood. That's wild.
It's delicious.
I'm excited to see how this opens.
Me too.
I think that, you know, we always talk about gimmicks.
Yeah.
And like using different chars and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I think because they're 30-gallon barrels, it works.
Okay, so this, yes. Okay, go for it.
So up front, I'm enjoying this. This is very flavorful, very sweet, enjoyable.
Yep.
And then
if you water this down with a couple drops.
Oh.
But my esophagus is like, hey homeboy,
yeah,
chill out. Yeah. It's kind of burning down here.
100%. Well, okay. So, I mean, and this makes so much sense. Char forward oak and smoke flavors on the front end. So that's that dry tartness.
Yep.
And it only saying that, take a sip and think about drawing in on a cigar.
Oh yeah.
That's what I'm getting. And it makes so much sense. And then caramel.
Yep.
Finished with mild spice in the body and an earthy finish.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. That's 1,000% caramel and that earthy finish.
Yep.
Everybody yells at me for drinking bourbon, but I mean, it's a skill. Okay?
Earthbound, baby.
I mean, not only that, but when's the last time you grabbed a craft beer and you were like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I taste the... The hops.
This tastes like an IPA.
No, it tastes like a goddamn.
I heard they added hops.
You shoved hops in my mouth. You carbonated it, and now I feel like I ate a meal.
Oh man, that's wonderful.
This is delicious.
That is great.
To all my beer drinkers, I get it, and I respect.
Let's see what this does. I'm interested to see it open.
This is my first pour of bourbon since the last podcast.
Hell yeah.
Not that I've not been drinking. Like I said, I've been seeking a beer because I've been busy.
Yeah.
And vodka.
Yeah, okay.
Because
clear stuff? Pinky out?
This is the first pour of bourbon for me since last night.
You guys know how I do it, so.
Here, here.
All right.
Sorry, this is totally random. Yeah. But I went to the liquor store last night, and I was dealing with a lawyer and a roofer, and I was pissed off. I was like, I'm not going to drink. And then I was like, you know what? I have this phone call. I'm going to go pick up a bourbon. And they re-released the Basil Hayden 10-year.
Ooh.
And I grabbed it.
What'd you think?
And I put that shit right back.
Good for you.
And I got something else.
I was going to say. I was like, I was curious. I was like, is he going to trash it? Because, I mean, for beginners,
that one off.
That's not bad, right?
No, but you know what? You know who has? So I picked up Heaven Hill Grain and Glass.
Yep.
Rippy at Crystal Valley. He's got 3 bottles of it.
Of
the Heaven Hill Grain and Glass.
What's he selling for?
76.
That's not bad.
At all. That's really good.
That was a good bourbon.
Yeah.
I talk about that bourbon a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I was glad that we did the whole series.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely. We're blessed.
Yep.
Whenever I talk to people about the podcast, I tell them, look, we're episode 86 now. So we've had about 86 different bourbons on top of what we already drink. And then they start asking questions. And I'm like, what's weird, before I'd be like, just don't ask me too much. Now it's just like I find myself not being able to shut up.
Yeah. About it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially now that I've had so many different ones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
And it's not even opinions because we're fact checking on the spot what our taste palates and flavors and notes and whatnot.
We're doing pretty good too.
I'd say so.
So on today's episode, the topic that we're going to talk about is one that kind of not a lot of people really think about when they're starting their home buying journey, and it's the experience of buying from a new builder, like a new build construction, or going to like a pre-owned residential home
a resale
in your neighborhood.
Yep. Man, that's tasty.
And then after that, we're going to kind of talk about how these tariffs that went into play yesterday on Freedom Day or whatever the hell it was called, may affect new build homes. Just because obviously they use wood to build it, and wood is a big import that it's going
to
be tariffed.
And I mean, not to get into the subject right away, but not just wood, but
everything.
You know,
everything.
There's a lot of technological, like motherboards that go into houses now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to affect
it. Oh, that's true. Yeah,
I think China is probably one of the biggest importers of stuff like that. And it's maybe a smaller sliver of...
Yeah.
Because...
But no, I mean, it makes so much sense, too.
There's
especially with these homes that are doing more smart regulation for, like, eco-friendly stuff.
Green homes.
Yeah.
You need a lot of electronics.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But I haven't even talked about appliances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Appliances, thermostats, anything green
and
smart.
You remember what happened in 2020, COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't order a refrigerator to save our fucking lives.
You know what? Not just a refrigerator. And then this is another portion that we didn't think about. Paint.
Right.
Yeah.
There was chemicals in the paint we couldn't get.
Wow.
So here, we'll segue into this by this caveat in real estate is you don't need a real estate agent to sell your house. You also don't need a real estate agent or you also don't need a lawyer to go to court. That's kind of how I put it. You don't need a real estate agent to go buy a new build, but it's a good idea because at the end of the day, we are your recourse. If the builder, walking into the builder's office, the sales rep's going to be friendly, but they work for the builder. Their contracts are geared to protect the builder. There's so many times where I've had to go up against that. So we are your recourse and we are the insurance. If I do my job right, you're going to be happy and I'm going to protect you like an attorney. If something happens, you know, a lot of realtors don't want to say this, but we hold insurance for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Sue me. I'm going to make sure I do my job right so you don't sue me. So let's open it up by saying,
talk
to a realtor even if you're going to buy a new construction.
It was very menacing.
It was. The way the lights hitting you right now, I was like, ooh.
Especially when you ended with sue me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Look, you should have taken the glasses slowly off.
It's like Dark Knight. Yeah. Realtors aren't the heroes that you need, but they're the heroes you deserve.
No, but Oscar, you brought up a good point. And the reason I wanted to talk about this topic was because, again, it's an experience.
You merely hang out in the dark.
I was born in new construction.
But you make a really good point, because the experience buying a new build home from a builder is completely different than buying a resale home. And again, resale just means your neighbor is selling their house. Somebody like a normie. Selling a home, a homeowner. So let's kind of talk about what that looks like.
This
from...
is sweet, man. this is good.
I knew it. I knew, right when I took a
this
sip, I was
good.
Like,
"This is good. I can't stop sipping it."
This is Oscar's premium.
I'm gonna need an Uber home.
Yeah,
I got shit to do today.
So okay, let's go ahead and we'll shape the two out. So I'm gonna lean on both of you guys, right? So Oscar, you're gonna take place of the new build construction experience. Jameson, you're gonna take place of the resale experience.
Cool. Okay, good to me.
So. How we're going to structure this is we're basically going to start and then go through the transaction and kind of go through the experience and then end it there. So first thing that you do, you're a client, you're looking to buy a home. Oscar, what does that look like with a new build community?
With a new build community, I first talk to my client to see what location they want, and then I start doing my homework on the builder.
Okay.
I talk to the builder, I talk to the associate, see what they have inventory home, what the spec build, what the time. And then once we're there, they talk about elevation and all the goods, right?
Yep.
Quite common now, a lot of the builders have removed the gallery, and they're just doing a few differences, but it's pretty specced out. Mm-hmm. Elevation means the exterior of the home and where it sits, and then there's the property.
Yep.
So corner lot, you know, you have more land or whatnot, and then the finishes on the outside is the elevation.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right.
So I do that homework, and then the consumer starts guiding me from there.
So Jameson, mm-hmm. What does it look like? What does it look like for a resale home? That process.
The initial conversation is the same, right? Where do we want to live? What are the things that we're looking for in the home? What are your haves, or your must haves, your nice to haves, you know, and your like dream.
Mm-hmm. Your must-haves and can't live withouts.
Can't live withouts, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we narrow down by neighborhood.
Your wants and needs.
Maybe
list.
It's a school district that they're looking for. Maybe they want to be close to parks. Maybe they want to be close to specific amenities. Maybe they're looking for a home that may or may not have an HOA, you know, in place, right? So we figure that out, and then we go in and we start to narrow. In a new construction, you go into the community, and you pick out what we would call the floor plan.
So that's actually where I was going to go with that.
Right.
So
in resale, you're not looking at the floor plan. You're looking at specific houses mm-hmm. that fit your criteria within different neighborhoods.
Exactly. So basically the biggest difference that you're going to see here with new build homes, you're going to walk in and they're going to say, hey, we have home A, B, C, and D. Normally it's going to be like home Regal, home
Jackson, the Hemingway.
Yeah, the Hemingway, right? They have different
the Shenandoah
building models that have rooms in different places, added rooms, finished basements, non-finished basements.
Flex
so
rooms.
In one place with a builder, you have an opportunity to get something like three or four different homes.
It's a product.
Exactly.
It's akin to going to Best Buy mm-hmm. and seeing all the TVs on the wall, and you're going to have the premium TVs. You're going to have the semi-premium TVs. You're going to have the bargain TVs.
Yep.
And then you got to figure out what you want based on your room and your experience that you want, you pick out the product. It's very simplified, but for the most part, let's take Richmond, right? The Richmond have, in my neighborhood, it was the Dillon, which was their largest model. There was the Seth, which was the second largest, but it added the three-car garage and a foyer. It was the Hemingway, which was their other two-story, and then they've got the Daniel and the Arlington, which are the two ranches.
Damn. They're two away from just having standard white guy American
yes,
names.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I was like, the Dillon.
Yeah.
The Chad.
The Steven.
And then they have the Jose.
Oh,
it doesn't
man.
Work that way.
But no.
No, but you know, one of the biggest things that differ, and that shouldn't shy you away, because sometimes some people want the experience of having their own home
sure.
and then being the first ones living there. It all comes out to a few things. There's pros and cons. One of the cons is the taxes are going to be assessed very high. You're going to have, you know, whatever the mill levy is in the area, you know, 1.5% of the purchase price, say $700,000, your tax is going to be super high. Now, in a resale home, the taxes are already established and they don't really budge from there unless they reassess the property. So please know that, please factor that in, because you're going to be surprised, because the first year it's the assessed value of land, and then the following year is the assessed value of the constructed property with the land. So that jumps up substantially. Just make sure you're taking that into consideration before you move forward with
that
a
is
lot
a,
of stuff.
No, see, Oscar, that is a phenomenal point. And I think that's something that a lot of consumers wouldn't be aware of, is the fact that when you have a new build home, the county, the city, the town that you're in, they don't know yet technically what that tax is, what the value is, because they just built it. Versus a resale home has been present, has been there. So it's gone through tax hikes, tax lowerings. So you actually have a better idea of your monthly or your yearly taxes on a resale home than you do on a new build.
Now let's tackle the why. Yeah. Why is it so high? Well, it's a new community. So you're going to need infrastructure. You're going to need schools, grocery stores. So all that gets taken into consideration because tax dollars funds, not all of it, but, you know, certain sectors of that, right? Your tax dollars fund.
I mean, you need a street to get to the community.
Right. So it funds infrastructure. You know, well, your homeowner's tax funds a lot of stuff, the county stuff, and then state as well. So it's going to be a lot higher because they need to build that out still. Mm-hmm. You don't have a King Supers, a Safeway. You know, if you're out East Coast, you know, you have Publix and whatnot. Food so, and so they have to fund a lot of that and construct a lot of that. So they're building your community for you, and that's why your taxes are so high. Infrastructure and community, they got to build it out. Mm-hmm. So in a resale home, everything's already established.
Yep.
On top of the fact that, you know, what's the biggest thing that you don't think about when you buy a new home? Inspection.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's brand new. What could go wrong with brand new?
Well, that's so,
okay, so that's what I was going
right.
to say.
So if, from Oscar's standpoint, mm-hmm. right, he's taking his clients. Taking your clients, they've picked out their elevation. They've gone through the numbers. What's pre-approval process look like on a new construction?
All right, so yeah, I'll go ahead and structure. So we went to, hey, I'm looking to buy a home. What does that look like? The next thing that comes after that is, how the hell am I going to afford this? How am I going to buy this?
So a pro going new construction is that they've also learned that marketing is one thing, but they'll drop dollars on in interest rates, right? So they've gotten their preferred lender and thrown money at that bank or financial institution to buy your rate down. So let's say your average consumer is getting to 6% right now across the board. The builder is going to say, hey, you know, we're going to combat that high tax price because they know it's a bit high. By lowering your rate for the first 3 years, if they do a 3-2-1 buy down, or if they do just a straight buy down, if the consumer is getting a 6% on a resale with your average banker, you're going to get probably 2% drop on average, if not 3, with a buy down. What's a buy down? That means that you pay money to come down. The first year you have one interest rate, the second year it goes up 1 point, third point, and then it stays fixed. So they've thrown money at their preferred lender, and their preferred lender will do everything possible to make this happen because they want to keep the builder happy. So your qualifications might be a little bit easier and you're going to have a better rate. And that's all, you know, that's part of their marketing budget.
Yeah. All right. Jameson, what does it look like on resale?
Yeah. So from a resale standpoint, you go through the same process as getting pre-approved, right? Whether you're going via, you know, D.R. Horton's lender versus a private lender, you have more flexibility to choose your lender in a resale, which can be a good thing. Because there are horror stories of the new construction lenders. Yeah, they're going to give you a great rate and they're going to give you those buy down points, but the process tends to be much more painful because they're turning and burning, right? They work 9 to 5. They're working on thousands of applications at the same time, so the customer level of customer service is going to be very different going with a builder versus a privately owned mortgage company. The downside is, yes, instead of the builder or the homeowner, right, giving you those discount points, it turns into more of a negotiation.
Right, you can still negotiate on the resale side all day long.
Right. So
and the builder kind of the builder sticks it to you because if you bring in your own lender, they'll take your incentives away.
Yes.
So if the builder's willing to give you $30,000 and a good rate,
right.
Oh, you're going to use your own lender. We're going to pull our incentives, use your own lender. We're giving you $5,000.
Yep, exactly. And if you go from a resale standpoint and you want that same ability to lower the rate for the first 1, 2, or 3 years, you have to either pay for it yourself or you have to negotiate with the seller to get that money applied towards any sort of discount points, whether it's permanent or whether it's a rate buy down.
Yeah. So.
And with a good realtor, I have made the builder give us those incentives back
Lender. Oscar, as a, not a rhetorical question, but a lot of people assume, as we're going through this pre-approval process, that in a resale home, you can negotiate everything, right? We always say it. In real estate, everything's negotiable. But a lot of people think that the price advertised on a new construction home, that's just what it is. Is that true? Can you negotiate
Absolutely.
On a new construction?
100%. You know, they're going to give you pushback. And if the consumer goes in there, they don't know any better.
Hold on. Build on that point. I want you to build on that. So, and what I mean by that is, Now, can you tell me the difference between what that would look like if you went in unrepresented versus you having an agent that represents you?
I can only speak for myself. I'm a radical thinker. I think all laws and guidelines are made by man and all could be broken. That's kind of how I take
you, you and Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, let's go, baby. The only difference is that he drinks brandy. I drink bourbon.
He would drink this.
Yeah, he would.
Jack Sparrow would be drinking.
He would definitely drink this. Mm. That's tasty. So
I'm gonna get nothing accomplished after this.
Me either. I'm just gonna throw that out.
We're going
there.
To get food.
So as a consumer, you're gonna walk in and they're gonna give you their spiel. They're gonna give you what they're gonna offer you, and then you're gonna tell them. They're gonna tell you no, and then that's where it ends. As a realtor, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to see what I can negotiate. They're going to tell me no, and I'll be like, okay, I'm going to take my client somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Let's get to talking. Do you rather, you know, get the deal done or not? And, you know, we stand on a less emotional platform than the average consumer. We're hired to do a job and negotiate for your best interest. Our fiduciary responsibilities to the consumer, not to the builder. And the builder is always going to have contracts that are geared towards their best interest. They're pretty basic, but they don't want to get sued. So to avoid going around their perimeters, they're just going to say no. And the sales rep work for the builder, not for you. As a realtor, I'm going to go in there and I don't give two craps if the realtor takes a loss. That's not me. My client's my main concern. So I'm going to tell them I want to keep the incentives. They're going to tell me no. And then we're not going to submit the offer because you're not giving us the incentives. We need to use our lender for whatever reason. And then they'll call me back about a day or two later and say, okay, we'll give you half. No, you give us all. And then we just keep pushing until they're like, okay, this is all we could give you. And at that point, I've exhausted all, well, you know, possibilities.
And that's a great point to make, though. And here's the thing, guys. We tell you this all the time. And Oscar said it at the very, very beginning of the conversation. You don't need an agent. You can buy, you can sell a home without an mm-hmm. agent. But you're going with one hand tied behind your back. And here, look, if you are somebody who can delve in and you're going to pay, you want to take a real estate class to learn about it so you can do it yourself, do that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people don't have time to sit down and learn all the nuances of a transaction.
Not only that, but if it's a builder that I've dealt with in the past, I know for a fact they could do these.
Well, and you have a relationship with them.
And right? I could call them up and say, like, hey, I got a consumer. Mm-hmm. What can you give me? And they're going to be like, you know what? We're going to give you everything because you keep bringing clients back.
Well, and that's a good point because the relationships piece specifically, right?
And I'll look for the same sales rep.
We do this on a daily basis. Like, this is what our job is, this is what our career is. And we'll go visit new builds and new communities, and we'll talk to the sales reps and make those relationships. But what we do as we're doing that is we know what communities are struggling to sell lots. Mm-hmm. We know what lot premiums are going up, what lot premiums are staying the same. We know that
builders taking it in the shorts.
For example, mm-hmm. you know, there's a builder I'm not going to name, but they had a period of time where they had to stop building in a community because they had to get rid of all the quick move-ins that they couldn't sell. Well, guess what happens? I knew that. I took my client to that specific location because it met most of their criteria, and we ended up negotiating almost $50,000 off purchase price with incentives, free landscaping, a whole bunch of different stuff. But the only reason that we were able to do that, they're not advertising. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're more negotiable because we need to sell these lots.
They're in trouble.
They're never going to say that, right? Yep. But I went and I was talking to those sales reps once a week. And I was told, hey, I asked the question, hey, so how come these lots right here, you guys haven't poured foundations yet? Well, we're not allowed to. Well, what do you mean? Why are you not allowed to? Well, we have to sell these lots first before we can actually get re-incentivized to start building.
The pawns are not going to give you the information.
In my head,
they're going to regurgitate what the builder has sold. We're not
building. I was like, green flag. So that means that you guys don't have enough money to start those lots until you sell these, which means you have an incentive now to sell these, right? The regular consumer doesn't have the time or the energy.
Or knows
or the relationship or the knowledge to ask those questions. And that's a huge bargaining chip.
Ladies and gentlemen, public service announcement. There's a reason why some builders cut us out during the low interest rates.
Oh my God.
They were offering no commission. They were offering less commission mm-hmm. because they want to make sure that their standards and their guidelines are put in place.
Yep.
There's a reason why they all of a sudden market the hell to us and raise our commissions when they're struggling.
Yes.
Because they know we're going to go in there and look after our client's best interest. And our client's best interest is never profitable for them. It's not that they're not being unethical or anything. They're just looking for their profit margin. We go in there. I could care less if a millionaire is not going to make an extra $10,000. I really look for my client's best interest. So it's in their best interest that we don't get involved, because we're going to start, you know, rattling cages. We're going to start purging from their profits to make the consumer come out better. So think about that.
Absolutely.
Think about why they tell you, oh, you don't have an agent. He had to be here. Too bad. You can't use him. Why? It wouldn't be such a thing if it was in their best interest. Mm-hmm. It's in their best interest. You don't walk in there with a representation because we're gonna be like, no, because we know better.
So you have the representation. You got it. Now you got your funding and you found a house. You've gone under contract. Let's talk about, obviously, you know, a real estate transaction is a real estate transaction. It follows an outline, a guideline inside the contract, dates and deadlines. But there are differences between resales and new home builds. So, Oscar, can you take us through what that kind of looks like? Once you're under contract, the transaction is starting. How does that look?
There's a few pick your own adventure on books. So if you're doing dirt start, it's going to be a process of a few months. You're going to go out there, you pick your lot elevation, and then they pour foundation, and then you go through the drywall stage, and you get to look at the house, and then you go through all these stages, and then you get to the end. And then let's say that you went through all that. We try to keep it an hour. So let's say that it's already constructed and everything. Typically, you do a final walkthrough, but when you do the construction, you do a blue tape walkthrough. So you go through the property, make sure there's you look for imperfections, and if you see them, you put blue tape on them. I have a reel on that, and then they send it back. The superintendent goes back, corrects everything, and then you do another walkthrough, make sure everything's done, and then you close.
Right? So you basically have, as a consumer, you have eyes, at least from dirt. If you're building from dirt, you have eyes on that building process from start to finish, and you can put that input in from start to finish.
As a real estate agent, you know, you're like, why am I there, right? One, it's exciting. I want to go through that process with you. But two, I'm also looking at built specs, right? I have a background in construction and in architectural design. So let's say that 99% of the time it goes as planned. You're still, the builder's still dealing with subcontractors and whatnot. Say that they just robbed you for 10 to 100 square feet. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, hey, this half bath was supposed to be a full bath. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff we catch. The consumer can catch that kind of stuff. But towards the end, the builder is going to just try to sweep it under the rug. And that's one aspect that we come in and be like, no, don't sweep it under the rug. Either correct it or there's going to be a major discount.
You touched on this. During a new home construction, since it is new, is the process still the same? Are you still going to do an appraisal? Are you still going to do an inspection, all that kind of stuff?
The bank's never going to lend you on an asset that they're going to back their money on without doing an appraisal. So it's a little subjective, because if they have their lenders going to know that, you know, that whatever they're pricing it at, their appraiser is going to go out there. So hopefully the builder did their due diligence on that. But yes, absolutely. If you use your own lender or if you use the builder's lender, there's still going to be appraisal done on the property.
Okay.
Yes, 100%.
How about inspections? It's a new built home. I mean, everything just got built, so what's going to be wrong with it?
With the new construction, you don't generally do an inspection, but I always recommend it for two reasons. Everything's brand new and you have all these walkthroughs and the corrections and blah, blah, blah. You still have the unseens like sewer lines and whatnot. So I always recommend that you do a final inspection on the house, even if it's brand new, because the inspector is going to go in there non-biased and look at all the appliances and everything and do a sewer scope, because, you know, you don't know how that land was compacted afterwards.
How it settled.
And it would make for a belly in your sewer line. Now, what I do recommend after you purchase the house, that the builder's going to give you warranties for the property, right? So it's a bit of a peace of mind. The structural is usually 10 years for the settlement of the foundation, and then there's about a year or so for any of the functionality of the house, plumbing, electrical, whatnot, drywall, holes in the wall, wear and tear. So what I always recommend that the consumer doesn't know is that at the 11th month, if it's a year worth of warranty, at the 11th month, do a general inspection on that house again. Let someone come in with a fine tooth comb throughout the house, furnace, water heater, everything. And if there's anything wrong, submit it to the superintendent or to the sales office and say, hey, come fix this, because after that 12th year, you're on your own.
But Oscar, what if I submit all of my complaints in the 11th month, but they can't get to it till month 14. Is it still covered?
Put it on paper. Hell yeah. You know,
it is. A lot of people don't think that, right? They think it has to be fixed by month 12.
No.
If you submit it,
because
it's under warranty.
99% of the time, the superintendent doesn't have time for your house.
Yes.
But you've submitted it prior to your warranty to expiring.
Exactly.
This is what's wrong with my house. Get your ass back here and fix it. Case in point, what if you do foundational or flat work, right? Your driveway, the cement, your patio, the sidewalk that comes to your house, that's all covered. And if you do it during the winter time, say you submit at the 11th month or 10th month, whatever, you want to give yourself a buffer, and you have cracks or settlement of your flat work, they're not going to be able to do it during the winter time. So make the claim now. When the season gets better, they come and pour it because you've already made that claim.
But Oscar, if I buy a new construction home and they tell me that my foundation warranty is 10 years, right? Well, my foundation's cement. Is my driveway and my patio and my sidewalk not included in that?
Not included. Your foundation is only what the structure that holds up your house. Everything else is considered flat work.
Yep.
That's your driveway, inside your garage, any concrete that's not tied into your foundation. And this is a little bit more on that. The foundation is perimeter of your home that's holding up the structure of your home. Anything else is floating, including your basement flooring. Your basement flooring is not part of the foundation of the home. It's made to adjust with the house. The foundation is engineered to shift and stay in place. So everything that's not holding your house is considered flat work, and it's not covered under the foundational properties of warranties of your house.
If you guys are enjoying this masterclass, subscribe to the podcast, drop it down. I'm sorry, but it's moments like this where I'm like, damn, we're literally giving away so much free information. It's so good for consumers.
And the consumer doesn't know that they can come in and do an inspection. Hell, if your freaking foundation looks a little off, hire a structural engineer and say, hey, you need to come in because that's going to, a structural engineer. If you're that concerned, hire a general inspector first. It's going to be the cheapest route.
Yep.
And then he's going to come see and say, hey, you know what? This is outside my pay grade. Hire a structural engineer. At that point, you know you have a professional with another set of eyes that does this all the time and says, hey, get someone that's a little more proficient at this. Then a structural engineer comes out and says, yep, that's a problem. You may pay $1,000 for that report, but now you have a report to turn into the builder that says this foundation needs correcting.
Correct.
$1,000 could save you $45,000.
100%. 100%. All right. So that's what it looks like from the new build position. So just to give you guys a recap, pretty similar. You still get an appraisal. A lot of people will negate doing any kind of an inspection because they go, oh, it's newly built. It's good. But as you guys have seen it, I mean, look at what D.R. Horton went through over the last 5 years. New build construction homes, don't forget, they are burn and turn. Structure, build, get up, go to the next one. And the reason I say it like that is because Jameson has an incredible story around a basement and plumbing on a new build home.
That's actually a big one.
Yeah, so Jameson,
let me fuel your fire before you get going. In my tenure in this damn business, I have sold houses that were built in the 1800s and houses that were built yesterday. It doesn't matter the year. The houses that were built before, foundations have settled. I've seen houses with cinder block foundations that are still standing strong.
Mm-hmm.
So all right,
I like
character too. So yes. I like the older homes, but take it away.
The example. This is, and Jameson had this experience with a new build home. Like I'm talking like, hey, we just shut the door, they just left 2 days ago, the people building this house.
Yeah.
Jameson, go for it.
Well, so what you have to understand is when a builder builds a house, they have to get permits and they have to get approval, right?
Codes and all
that. They have to go through all the codes. They've got to go through fire code. They've got to get the electrical permit. They have to get the plumbing permit. And every time they get those permits, they have to have somebody come out.
An inspector.
And inspect it. So the inspector that inspects the electrical work is not the same person that inspects the plumbing. And it's not the same person that inspects the drywall, the foundation, the grading, all that kind of stuff, right? And at the very end, the red light, green light, do not pass, go, is what's called a CO, Certificate of Occupancy, which basically means that somebody from the city signs off, says everything is in place, the permits are pulled correctly.
I have a story. Remind me. I'll write it down. Everything's
done, and we are issuing a Certificate of Occupancy, which means this house is fit for habitation by human beings, okay? My story was, as we were going through this, we were doing one of the final walks, and one of the things that I do anytime I do a final walk is I start turning on faucets, turning on everything, making sure there's no leaks anywhere, right? Well, we did that, And all of a sudden, the basement started getting wet and flooding. And we were confused.
But it's a new home, James. We just finished.
Yeah, it was crazy.
All the permits are good.
We're looking there. Whatever, certificate of occupancy. So I have the seller go up, or the buyer go up, and turn on the shower, and I sit in the basement. Luckily, the basement was unfinished, mm-hmm. right? Because otherwise, this would have been even worse. And they turn on the shower, and I hear it come through the main drain. And then I look up, and I see an opening. And then I see about 20 feet of space, and then I see another opening.
Oh, shit.
And I just see the water cascade into the basement from the upstairs shower. What that means
Inspectors are humans too, guys.
They did not connect the main sewer line. There was a 20-foot gap. So I immediately call up the rep, the sales rep for Richmond Homes. I
bring
go,
your
hey,
ass down here.
I'm not going to say names, but you need to get your ass down here. He goes, what's going on? I go, just come down here and I'm going to show you. So
damn.
He walks down. I go, you see that giant wet spot? He goes, yeah. I go, look up. He looks up and he goes, what the fuck? I go, how does this happen? How did you guys get a certificate of occupancy? How did the plumbing permit get approved? And you were missing a 20-foot section of a fucking plumbing, brand new construction from the ground up. But those are the things that can happen.
Mm-hmm. I have a story on the opposite end of that. We could not get CO approval, could not get certificate of occupancy because the front patio landing step was 6% grade. It's supposed to be 5%, mm-hmm. something like that. 1%, they could not give CO. And you would think, okay, well, that's good. It's 1%, but it's for the consumer.
Right.
My client couldn't move into this house, which he already sold his house, outside of the city limits. He's still in Colorado, but he was on the Western Slope. Packed and moved. Because we're supposed to close on time. The inspector would not give CO because of a percentage of grade, which is nothing.
Mm-hmm. Barely. Yeah.
And what did the builder say? We can't.
Yep.
Sorry, we're extending. No. My client has nowhere to stay. Bullshit, we're extending. Nope. Sorry. Nothing we could do about it. Take it up with the county or city. Our hands are tied. Okay. Oscar made a phone call to the sales rep. Sales rep wouldn't pick up. I have clients with kids that are ready to move into the community, and it is not ready.
You're paying for a hotel.
They said no. I said, credit and money. Nope, credit, nope. I went around the sales rep, talked to the management. Management got fired. I won't name the builder, but it rhymes with pentry. Screw them. So I went on LinkedIn and talked to the regional director.
It's a builder that's been around for about 100 years.
I went and friended their regional director.
There you go.
And said, I have a problem.
Yep.
At that point, all of a sudden, the rep called me.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do something about this. I have a client that has nowhere to stay. He's been paying out of pocket. I need you to reimburse him his hotel and extend that hotel until we got CO. On top of that, I'm going to submit food and anything else they do
daily
here.
Daily channels. Yep.
Good shit.
Yep.
So that's outside of the scope of the real estate, right?
And that just goes
it had nothing
show.
To do with the house. It had nothing to do with incentives. It had nothing to do with any of that crap that we already built in. It had to do with after the fact you screwed up, you need to rectify this. What does that look like? It's subjective.
But that's a perfect example as to what you were saying before where builders are after their bottom line. Yep. It's a company, right? They have to keep that. And they are going to do things with you and to you that are going to help them stay there. So as far as the transaction goes, really, really pretty similar. So
I can do it quick.
Yeah,
right?
Go
so
for it.
So from a resale standpoint, you go through a lot of the same processes. The only difference is there tends to be more points of negotiation, and those negotiations tend to be a little bit more emotional, right? Because you have
a lot more
buyer,
emotional than this.
Yeah, you have a buyer that's buying a home for the first time with their family. You have a seller that's lived there for 20 years with their family, and they think nothing's wrong. So it tends to get a little bit more emotional, and the steps are very similar, right? I think the only real big differences are you're going to get more – title is going to be more involved because you got to make sure there's no mechanic liens or anything else that have clouds on title that would make it difficult to purchase the house. The appraisal is going to be a little bit different because you're doing market value versus what the builder is selling the houses for. So there tends to be more negotiation in appraisals. And when an appraisal comes in on a resale home, that's what the house is valued at. When an appraisal comes in on a new construction home, it could be that appraisal comes in, and then by the time you close – if 15 more lots get built, mm-hmm. your appraised value goes up $60,000 and you actually walk in with equity, which is fantastic. Then you go through the inspection. Again, if you have new construction, you can do an inspection during or you can do it after. Really depends on where they want to spend the money. But at the end of the day, you want to do it to be protected. In a inspection on a resale, you either have things that need to be fixed or you can go through and get concessions, money, credit, so on and so forth.
The builder gives you warranty. Can you do a warranty on a resale?
Yes and no. I mean, you don't get one from the seller,
but can
you can purchase one that will cover certain major systems, HVAC,
so
AC.
A good real estate agent will make sure that your house at least has warranty for peace
Correct.
Of mind, right?
Yes, and that same real estate agent will make sure that the warranty that you're getting, they pay attention to the dollar limits.
Hey,
on the,
hey guys, I have a story.
On the larger thing.
I have a real estate story, guys.
And add, yes, I have a story. And add the AC and washer and dryer and everything else.
I did it, guys. So on your point, my past clients, my first-time home buyers that we were buying out near Commerce mm-hmm. City, they're mm-hmm. living right off Rocky Mountain Arsenal. So they're...
My cousin may have gotten thyroid cancer from there.
Right. Well, so one thing we did is we looked up water, all that kind of stuff. But this was a recent renovation. And you could tell there were some areas that were renovated. It was the landlord special, right?
Lipstick on a pig.
Exactly. And there were wires that were exposed. There were things in the crawl space, stuff like that. So it really scared my buyers. And they were like, you know what? The roof is pretty old. It hasn't really been redone. There's not a lot of damage, but it is older. Downstairs, that plumbing kind of looks a little wonky. I don't really know about it. So throughout the transaction, talking with the seller, talking with the sales agent, we kind of said, you know, positioned it as, hey, look, these buyers are very interested in the home, but based on some of the walks that we've done in the inspection that came up, they're a little worried about the longevity of the work
sure.
and what's going to happen. Oh, well, you know, seller came back. Well, you know, they do have insurance. They're going to have home insurance on it. They could use that to replace the roof or anything that pops up. Yeah, well,
know your policy of insurance, too. Mm-hmm. That's another episode.
That's something that's going to come up. You're going to come out of pocket for that. They're still going to have to pay for it. So honestly, can we work something out? And we ended up getting a warranty for them that seller paid for 1 year, and as a closing gift, I added a second year.
Mm-hmm.
And Jameson, I love that you dropped the point of the cost, the pricing, right? So one thing that they were worried about was the roof. And if you looked at this home warranty, that home warranty covers repairs up to $1,000, right? And so I was talking with the buyer, and I was like, you know, are you guys going to be worried about this for 2 years? Is this something that's going to be big for you? They're like, yeah, but we don't really want to come out of pocket. And okay, cool. So I looked it up, and guess what? You can actually purchase with this home warranty an additional roof coverage on it that will cover $1,000+. So called up the warranty, talked to the seller. We got that added onto their home warranty. So now that home warranty covers their roof, their plumbing, appliances, all major things for 2 years. And guess what? That's 2 years of saving mm-hmm. that you can do to plan for a new roof. You can plan for a HVAC system. You can plan for a water heater, whatever it is. But I'm glad that you brought that up because although new builds do offer some kind of a warranty with their purchase because they're new builds, you can access that with resale homes.
Well, it's different.
And really fast, Mr. and Mrs. Consumer, on the sales side of that, it could be beneficial as well because a home warranty throughout the transaction also covers the seller.
Here's a pro tip I'm gonna say about home warranties, right? When you think home warranty, the goal is to protect the major system. So mm-hmm. we call it outside of the roof, HVAC, AC, plumbing, electrical, appliances, right? Those are the big ones. Most home warranties that you purchase have a dollar limit on those major systems. For example, if you go through, I don't know, what is it?
First American 210.
Whatever, 210 home warranty, right? Let's do 210 home,
Blue Shield.
210 home warranty. If your HVAC goes out, so let's say your furnace goes out, they have a dollar limit up to $5,000. That's what they cover, right? Well, Oscar,
Hello.
In your experience, if I have to rip and replace a furnace, how much is that actually going to cost me?
Oh man, it's up there. I mean, on
10
the
grand?
On,
8 to 10
on,
grand,
on
right?
the low end, probably about 7. On the high end, 15 grand.
Right. So if I have a home warranty and it says, "Hey, you know what? Yeah, your HVAC's covered," but they come and find out you file a claim, you pay the $150 service fee, and they go, "Yeah, we have to actually rip and replace it. It's going to cost 10 grand." And your home warranty covers 5 of that, as a homeowner, you're out of pocket $5,000, mm-hmm. right? So knowing or having an agent that understands to look at those type of things, I've used American Home Shield now for my past 7 transactions, I would say, because they have a version of their home warranty that you can only get if you're an agent enrolling a home that you're either buying or selling that allows up to $15,000 per
incident.
Major unit incident.
That's huge.
AC, HVAC, plumbing, sewer line, everything.
Hell, water heaters are $3,000 these days.
Right. And just for the sake of
pro
time.
Pro tip, though. Just saying.
Just for the sake of time, because we are coming up on that hour mark already.
And we haven't even touched on the tariffs.
We'll get there. That's what I'm saying. So anyway, closing. Yes. You go through the transaction. Closing. Oscar, what does that look like from a new build home? And then Jameson, follow up with what it looks like from a resale.
After all that's done it's pretty similar. You go and you close in their sales office and, you know, you get keys and you're good to go. Once closing's done, you know, the final inspection, it's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Yep. Resale, same thing, right? You do a final walk, usually a day or two before closing. You make sure if you ask for anything on the inspection resolution or anything to be fixed, you go through and essentially what you're doing is you are making sure that the house is in the exact same condition as it was when you went under contract or better as it is the day before closing. Otherwise, that's really your last out as a consumer to walk away and be able to keep your earnest money, deposit, whatever it is. And then you close at a title company. They give you wiring instructions. You exchange keys. You can either do it with the seller or the buyer together or separate. I prefer separate, especially depending on how the transaction goes.
Yep.
And then you close, get the keys, and move on.
I love it. Yep. I love it. So,
do you know why they call it the Rocky Mountain Arsenal?
Why?
Because there's silos there for nuclear bombs.
Well, yeah, it's all
no shit.
Yeah,
it's all uranium. It's all buried uranium.
Dope. Might have to go get some.
I don't know if the faulty wiring was more of the concern, but it's a wildlife refuge
we did
now.
It, I was gonna say we did all the inspections on it. I actually looked at the water report, got the most recent water report, and reviewed it, and looked at how many parts per million were in there. All that, sent it to them. Like, but again, that's peace of mind. That's. The
listen, there are
thing.
Sometimes that I'm like doing things in life. I'm like, if I had 2 extra fingers, this would be way easier.
But no, it all
or maybe
out.
Not.
And here's the thing, guys. The reason that we wanted to talk about this, and Jameson, like I said, expertly kind of dropped it on a little bit earlier in the podcast, is when it comes to new build homes, the reason we are talking now about the tariffs and we want to mention the tariffs is because exactly to Jameson's point, having an agent that is aware of things that are going on around these builders. Mm-hmm. Will allow you, the consumer, to capitalize. So as you can see, new build homes versus resales, there's their pros and cons on both of them, right? But to be aware, and one thing that we're gonna see with these tariffs is this is pretty much a, what was it, 20% or 10% across the board blanket tariff on all incoming goods?
10 across and then retaliatory.
Against certain.
Which essentially, if, for example, retaliatory just means in the way that this administration has defined it, if a country is tariffing us 60%, the retaliatory tariff is half that, 30% across the board.
And yep. Just for the sake of argument, I'm going to play devil's advocate on both ends, just because we need to figure out how to quantify what the savings and expenditures are and where the real allocation of the monies are if we're saving on other, you know, everyday life stuff.
Yeah.
Just so you know, that's where I'm going with this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's where, like I said, and Jameson touched on it, these tariffs are going to be sweeping, covering pretty much everything. So
we're Svalbard.
Oscar just finished
scotch,
his glass.
Scotch. I love scotch.
Tariffs.
Not tariffs so much, but woo, this
hey,
is good stuff.
On that note, these tariffs might actually help the cost of bourbon in the United States.
Well, so I talked to you didn't go to Jose's happy hour. Dude, it was weird, but it was also
that's
very
also,
cool. The people that were there was
never
cool.
Mind, he watches this, but that's why I didn't go.
No, but no, I thank Jose because I met a couple
cool, I love Jose.
Really
Jose
cool people.
Jose, I love
I walked
Jose.
Out
He's
with
great.
A great new carpet cleaner guy.
Dale?
There was a surgeon there. I forget his name.
Dale Heath?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Bald guy?
Yep.
Super, super nice guy. So I walked away with that. And then the surgeon wants to do a bunch of stuff. And then a liquor store owner.
I'm sorry, the surgeon?
There was a surgeon there, plastic
what are you,
surgeon.
Are you
who? Plastic surgeon. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
that's a whole other
so
podcast.
Yeah, and he had like the you
get a BBL.
He had a big boob just like on the table, and then I held it, and I was like, "This is probably one
of
the of most awkward things a man can hold."
I was sitting there just jiggling, talking to him.
No. But
was in one hand and silicone.
So I'm sitting there with the drink in hand, and then him and his reps left, and mm-hmm. the rep Jose goes, "Hey, you guys left that thing on the table," and I was like. No, the surgeon said I could keep it. They looked at me. I was just kidding, but
that's
anyway.
Awesome. But so the reason that we bring up the tariffs is because again,
no. Before I was scared, I was going to say that because you said it was going to be a positive thing for bourbon.
Yeah.
He's seen sales drop,
yeah.
And that's alleviating a lot of the sales. for the high-end bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was telling me.
Okay, interesting, interesting. But the reason we want to say this is because, obviously, new-build homes, what do they need?
They need materials, wood, steel, stone, electronics, appliances.
Things that are asphalt. Getting tariffed.
So, you know, we were hyper-focusing on Mexico and Canada because we get mm-hmm. about 60% of our lumber from them, right? But according to the National Association of Home Builders, we get 68% of the building products most often imported new resident construction in 2023. Computers and equipment was 68%.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of green homes. You have thermostats. You have all that. That's a big number because appliances. We think new mm-hmm. construction and we think wood, right?
Yeah,
where are we getting our wood from?
Yeah.
And we got our neighbors from Mexico and Canada. What does that look like? That was only 7% of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
68% of the stuff that we get is overseas.
70%.
That's huge.
Okay.
Yep. So, and again, the reason that we're talking about the tariffs, and again, guys, this is not, we're not talking politically. We're talking specifically
and look at
to
that.
Consumers.
What's a big light blue one?
China.
We're tariffing those guys.
Mm-hmm,
that's a huge one. Where's Mexico and Canada?
They're
there, but China's huge. Yeah. So again, I'm going to play devil's advocate on both sides.
Here's the deal, right?
Yeah.
From a lumber standpoint alone, and when you think about whenever you build anything, right, you're building things out of what?
Materials.
Natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. is not a huge natural resource producer.
No,
it's not.
We're a service-based economy.
It never has been. It's service and technology,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you look at one of the largest
unless you're Texas.
Yeah. What's that? Right.
The
but
Republic of
at,
Texas.
If you look at building materials, mm-hmm. just building materials, softwood lumber is the number one building material in the United States, okay? That's just a fact. 84% of the softwood lumber that we import comes from Canada.
Mm-hmm.
84%. So if you look at it as a building material.
So I'm happy and not happy about that.
We're getting 84% from Canada, right? The rest we either grow in our own natural forests or we get it from Canada or Mexico. Those are the other two, right? So from a housing market standpoint, two things are certain. Number one, via NAFTA, which is the agreement between Canada, Mexico, and the United States, there was already going to be a reset of the tariff of lumber coming from Canada this year based on previous administrations, okay? So it was already going to get more expensive. Now you're tariffing an extra 10% or whatever the retaliatory is for Canada. So the lumber we primarily use for constructing homes, buildings, et cetera, is going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
And that cost is going to be pushed to the consumer.
Why? Why, Oscar? Because new construction owners are looking for what? They care about what?
Profit.
Their bottom line.
But
their
budget. So I bring that up because the other piece of information that I think is relevant is in Q1 and in Q4 last year, every single national home builder reported the narrowest margins in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the cost of lumber and supply chain issues and so on and so forth. So if their margins are getting slimmer mm-hmm. and we're now going to increase the cost of the number one construction material they use to build houses, do we think they're going to have money for those incentives that Oscar pointed out to buy down rates, to do all these different things? Or do we think that the cost of the lot premiums are going to go up because the cost of building those houses are going to go up?
And that's kind of where I wanted to take it.
What's my favorite word? Subjective. Because you can't quantify any of those numbers equally. You
correct.
Cannot.
No.
Because Toll Brothers is going to build a product. Richmond's going to build a product. Oakwood Homes is going to build a mm-hmm. product. Their budget is
so here's,
way different.
And here's something that
so we need. It's a subjective matter, we really need to dial it down because there's places that funds are going to be allocated.
I got you.
Go ahead.
So when it comes to builders, so as you guys know, I have a production company outside
and I'm gonna
of
pour me another one. I didn't
my
say
real estate stuff. And I work with a custom home builder here in Colorado. And one thing that they are really having us focus on as far as their marketing materials is that they are not a cost plus builder. And what that means is as a cost plus builder, what they're going to do is that means the cost can change as they're building your home. So if lumber prices go up, you can get a higher price than what you were quoted. So when I say that is look for builders that have that are not cost plus, because what that means is you're going to pay what you were quoted and the builder is going to take on the encumbrance of that pricing. So that's just a little insider tip from the market. And I will tell you guys, my home builders have already confirmed with me that they have been getting reports that prices are going to go up on average 18 to 23%. Right. So, and again, that's
of
just...
what? Again, quantified numbers. I need overall, quantified numbers.
Overall build costs for building materials are going to go up from their suppliers by 18 to 23%. Okay. And that is confirmed. But again, when you're looking for, if you're looking for builders, see if they are cost plus or not, because that will help you mitigate
most
and plan.
Builders are cost plus.
Yes.
Here's what I will say as a as just a caveat, because a lot of people are going to say, well, we can just get lumber from somewhere else, right? Because other countries have trees and so on and so forth. Here's why you can't.
Ukraine, we believe it or not, we get a lot of lumber from those guys.
Well, I mean, so and yes Russia. And no. Yes and no. Our imports, top three, Canada, 84%, Germany, 6.2%, and then Sweden, about 3%. Those are our top three.
Sweden,
right?
Yeah.
So,
but here's why it's not like it's not going to change. Because if you think about it, getting lumber from one country to another involves a supply chain. And that supply chain has been continually overhauled to become the most efficient supply chain possible. So to change the entire supply chain is extremely expensive. If we went from saying, hey, we're going to do 83% of our lumber from Canada, we're going to switch it to China. You have the entire Pacific Ocean to navigate. You've got.
I was going
to
say, a good example, right?
Right.
You need milk. Like yesterday, you have a 7-Eleven down the road that's going to sell it for $5 a gallon. Mm-hmm. But you get it in 5 minutes, or you go down to the King Supers. That's about 20 to 30 minutes down the road, mm-hmm. and you get it for $4. That extra savings is a dollar. That extra time saving is about 20 minutes. That's the difference. We get it from China. We get it from Canada. Less cost shipping from Canada. And then, you know, to say that we get it. It has, again, we got to quantify the value and time value and the cost of getting these goods. The National Association of Home Builders stated that, estimated that $2.4 billion worth of goods were used in construction of both multifamily and single-family housing in 2024. $14 billion of those goods they were imported from outside the U.S., meaning approximately 7% of all goods used in the residential construction originated from foreign nations. Now, devil's advocate. There's two sides to this coin. There's cost and what's that going to cost us? And then there's my personal emotional belief. I don't want them to deforest any of my land. Mm-hmm. As an American, I'm a little selfish. I'd rather them go take your forest than my forest. I'm sorry if you're watching this from other parts of the world. That's why they hate us as Americans, but I want to keep our resources. It comes at a cost.
Literally one of the most material dense areas in our country. And when the administration says, hey, we're going to bring production back to the States.
That means they're going to start drilling oil in Alaska. Mm-hmm. They're going to start deforesting Alaska. Yep. I don't want that.
No.
Mm-mm. Not at all. It comes at a cost, though.
Yeah. So let's quantify it.
So let's look at that.
Let's quantify it.
Yeah.
93% of new residential homes use soft lumber as a primary building material.
Canada.
The number one exporter of soft lumber is Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So those tariffs, when they surveyed the National Association of Home Builders, right, which they run these stats as a living,
mm-hmm.
their estimation, if these tariffs take place, and this article was done.
And again,
prior to.
I want to do some mass chaos mitigation.
Well, no, but hold on.
That's only 7% of the builder cost.
I know, but ready? Here's the deal. It's yes and no, it's 7%. They're expecting that the cost to build a home is going to increase at minimum 15%.
Which, if I read the stat right, was a little under 10 grand per house.
Well, I mean, it's got to be more.
That's what the National Association of Home Builders said.
So,
I'm doing some mass chaos mitigation here.
Well, what no, you're right. So
that's going off of average home price.
If it's a 300, if it costs $400,000 to build a home, right, 1% or 10%, is 4,000. So 15%, call it 8 grand, right? $8,000 or $9,000. But again, they now have to make a profit on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a 15% increase.
Again, subjective, because what's your profit margin going to be as a business plan?
Well, as a business plan, it's 30%. That's always been the golden standard. Mm-hmm. So my point is, if it's going to increase 15% to build a home, you're going to have another 30% increase to cover their margins. And that is before labor costs increase. That is before a lot of other things that happen, right? Because we also discovered that we were trying to deport however many million.
The building, the labor force.
Right, and 70% of that is the labor force. So that's also going to go up. My point is, like, the ripple effect is far and above we're going to bring manufacturing. So, and we talk about just the housing
it's
market.
It's not feasible in the United States to bring manufacturing 100% back mm-hmm. here.
Yes.
It's just not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not. We don't have the resources. And then the manpower is a secondary effect of that. But at the same time, I want to stop that ripple effect because I want to know the whole story. I play devil's advocate for a reason. I want to know why we're doing it. There has to be an explanation. Where are the funds allocated afterwards? Because if we're just doing tariffs just to be an ass, yes, 100%, fuck that, let's stop them now. But if the tariffs are being allocated somewhere else that are going to be beneficial for the for, and again, outside of the U.S., I'm sorry, but if it's going to be beneficial to the American people, then let's see what that is.
Yeah,
I need to know. We don't know that.
It's not.
Where's the money allocated?
Well, does it matter? Because
it does matter because if that means that I'm paying less taxes,
you're not though.
But it doesn't. Do we know that for a fact?
My point.
Because this administration threw out some radical shit, right? Income tax.
It doesn't matter about that. I'm talking tariffs specifically.
Yeah, but those tariffs were implemented to either negotiate, which is a trade war, right? Whatever we're doing, but also where is that money being allocated within the government?
But there's no money to be allocated is what I'm saying. Like the tariff, when it gets implemented, is paid by
the consumer.
Well, it's first paid by the company inside yes.
Anybody
the country.
That wants to do trades with the United States,
yeah.
it's a tax to come in and import their product.
Mm-hmm. Right, but that tax is paid for by the companies inside the United States.
But they're foreign entities.
No.
The company that is pulling the material in.
But still, those materials are...
If steel goes up and is tariffed 10% across the board, okay? Let's just say that. And Ford is an American company building cars and needs steel, right? That 10% tariff is not paid for by whatever company is importing the steel. It's paid for by Ford. That's how the tariffs work. They pay at customs that 10% tariff. And the whole idea of what a tariff is supposed to do is to encourage those companies to say, you know what, instead of buying steel from these people outside the United States, we're going to move the jobs inside the United States and produce it here so we don't have to pay that 10%. The problem is if they do that, now they are paying twice the amount from a labor standpoint to produce that steel in the United States so they don't have to pay the tariff outside
okay.
the United States.
Okay. I don't want to get too economically based on the tariffs. I want to stick on the
point
new
is
home.
Tariffs are going to make new home construction 50% okay. more expensive
yes.
in the next year.
Yes. Okay. Now let's lean on that. Let's lean on that and go.
So if that, but hold on, I want to clarify that. If that were the case, mm-hmm. and your analogy is 100% solidified, why are the other countries so griping about it if they're not going to take a loss?
They're griping about it because there is a chance that whatever they're importing to us, we decide to bring it into the United States, therefore they're not going to get
ultimately
the revenue.
Because the definition of what you're saying is that we're implementing tariffs to make it more expensive for national companies here
yes.
to build.
Correct.
But it also has to do with people importing and doing business with the United States. So the federal government's taking money from them.
So, well,
no.
Yes.
That's not how tariffs work.
Yes.
No,
in the economical arena of it, that's the way it's supposed to work. That we would benefit as a country. Now you're looking
at it
from a consumer
point.
You're looking at it from a consumer standpoint.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Okay,
I'm
elaborate.
Not. I'm not. So okay. So let's say I've got a T-shirt making company here in the United States. Okay, and I sell graphic design T-shirts. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I sell that T-shirt for $10 right now to you. Off the TikTok shop or wherever the fuck you buy it. But I get the T-shirt from China, okay? And that T-shirt I get from China costs me $5 to import in, and then I print it and I sell it. So I buy it from China for $5. I print something, some bullshit on it, and I sell it to Charlie for $10, okay? But then I import a 50% tariff on China imports across the board. So now that $5 T-shirt now costs me $7.50. To get from China, okay? Right? So yep. Now it's costing me $7.50 to sell the same $10 T-shirt to Charlie. Well, now I need to cover my cost because there's a tariff on Chinese goods. So instead of selling that T-shirt to Charlie for $10. Now I have to sell it to him for
$12.50.
I understand that.
Hold on. Wait. So now what I do is I say, you know what? Screw it. I'm not going to use China. I'm going to make my T-shirts here in the United States. And I want to sell it to Charlie for $10. But instead of China charging me $5 for that T-shirt, I have to pay American workers $13 an hour to make the same T-shirt. And now that T-shirt cost me $20 to make in the United States. Did I bring jobs to the U.S.? Yes, but I have to pay them more because I'm not paying Sungji Kim 17 cents an hour. I'm paying, you know, Walt Emerson $20 an hour. So now that T-shirt to make, I have to now charge Charlie $20
but here's where
to
I think
buy that same
here's
fucking
where,
T-shirt.
Here's where I think the disconnect lies, right? Oscar, you're looking at if it's not going to hurt them, then why are they reacting the way that they are? And then Jameson's coming from, no, it's the consumer side. Really, the reason that the countries are looking at it is because everything in the world is based off of the U.S. dollar. The entire world economy is based off of the U.S. dollar.
But
and when
I want to elaborate to that because there is more to that.
But what I'm saying is...
By definition, a tariff is a duty tax imposed by a government of a country or custom territory or by supranational union... on imports, so it's saying that we're going to impose a tax there.
Know,
so if that country still wants to import that same product, they could absorb the price too.
They could, but they're not.
They're not.
That's not how business
works. That's not what a trade war is.
But as a business partner, would you absorb a certain amount?
It doesn't matter because the tax is paid at customs mm-hmm. by the importing country. That mm-hmm. is how it works.
And the reason that these countries are reacting
Ford
the way
can't
they are.
Choose to not pay it and say, hey, I'm not going to pay it. So you fucking pay it. If the tariff is in place, Ford is paying the tax and the tariff on steel at customs to receive the product because the other company or the other country already produced the good and sent it off.
But wouldn't that throw a wrench into the computer? Because it's not how it works.
But
there's still decisions being made.
Well, this
on an upper scale.
Hold on. Let me explain it. This is what I was going to say. Because we're based, the U.S., the world economy is based on the U.S. dollar. The reason that it's called a trade war is specifically because what we are now doing, and you brought it up, it is a negotiation tactic. It is saying
this is about to turn the first take
to these other. Well, I'm saying to these other businesses that
which is good.
Yeah,
I know
this is good.
But what I'm saying is your what now those businesses are going. Oh shit, this is going to affect us because they're not going to buy as much. So to your point, Oscar. Yes, that is how it affects those companies. Their output, their earnings are not going to be as high because they're going to either slow down or stop completely. So that's where the trade war, yes, it does affect those countries, but at the end of the day, the US-based companies, and I'm going to go with you on this. This is a long-term strategy. This is to be completely honest, it is not going to do anything in the 4 years that Donald Trump is in office. This is if it stays in place. Over after 6 to 10 years, we're going to start seeing this flip. But unfortunately, we are so flip-flopped here now that we don't have the ability to come on common terms between different parties to say, hey, let's continue this because it's going to be good.
And again, I preface by I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be passionate about it.
Yeah.
Are you Ford?
Am I Ford?
Ford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you Ford? No, you guys are not Ford. The average consumer is not Ford. We have the option not to buy Ford's product. So who's going to be affected by it? Ford. Who is the left so pissed about? Big companies.
Yeah, but
billionaires. Hold on. Time out. So if you could, and again, I'm playing devil's advocate. If you could stick it to the fucking man, why not? Don't buy
like
their fucking product.
Do you like guacamole, Oscar?
Huh?
Do you like guacamole?
Fuck no. I'm allergic to it.
Are you allergic?
I'm allergic to avocados.
I love avocados.
Okay. What's your thing that you make the spicy salsa?
Jalapenos.
No, I know, but what do you make? What's it called?
The green sauce.
Whatever the green sauce is, right? Okay, so the jalapenos are whatever amount right now. Well, where do we get 90% of our jalapenos from?
I don't know. I buy my jalapenos from
Key Super. We get them from Mexico, okay?
I'm very self-conscious about what I do.
My point is, if we import a tariff, we can't just all of a sudden start growing jalapenos.
I understand,
you know what I'm saying?
What I'm saying is I'm playing devil's advocate because you're saying that these big companies are going to be passing off to the consumer.
They are.
As a consumer, we have the power of not to buy that product.
Right, but that's assuming.
So that's going to be an adjustment by big power and or other countries.
No, because now you're assuming.
But the other products are going to be more expensive,
and I'm not buying more expensive
because I already can't afford it.
Your argument is now predicated on the fact that we as a country are going to come together, which is not going to happen.
I want that.
But it's not going to happen, right?
Why not?
Because
we're American.
Division. What drives people? Convenience.
Yeah.
Right? That's it. It's convenience. I'm not going to go out and shop for a different, lesser-made car because of, it's going to cost me an extra $200.
I am.
You know what I'm saying?
I am.
Just not. You're not, though. You own a Porsche.
I know, and I was very strategic on buying that Porsche. Fucking,
you own a Suburban.
And I was and very strategic in it. And I was strategic
who
about it.
Who makes Porsche?
Germans.
Okay, who makes the Mercedes?
Germans.
Okay, so those are two imported cars.
Yeah.
So now what are you going to buy?
German cars.
Okay.
But that's my choice.
But if the German cars are assembled in the United States, right?
Which they were by Daimler Chrysler through the 90s.
Perfect. And now they're paying a tariff. Because
I'm just going to say, hold on. I just
again,
say,
it was my choice, though. It's still as a consumer choice.
I love your optimism. And what I mean by that is I love that, again, because it's rooted in Americanism. It's rooted in.
So, wait, who's imposing these tariffs?
The United States.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, the current administration.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really think that they're imposing the tariffs to collapse the union?
What?
Are they doing it to collapse us?
No. No, I don't think they're...
Okay,
I think we need
the whole story, and then maybe it is a give or take, maybe it's not, but we need to get the bigger picture as a consumer.
And what I was going to say about it is, I love your view on it, where, because you believe in Americans that we will buy American-made, but where I say is, this is such a unique...
And it's not even American-made.
But what I mean by that is, like, we will pay more for a product, but we are at a time where it is the most expensive that has ever been to be a United States citizen. So to do something where it's naturally going to raise prices for that citizen that is experiencing that now, I'm sorry, but I can't, I personally will not pay more because I'm trying to save more money so I can pay my bills.
Right.
Right? Okay. So, okay. We went far, but the Rouge is going to open here in the next 15 minutes. So we need to get, the main reason we bring up the tariffs, and this is why I want to say it, keep an eye on new build homes, because as Jameson said before, when they are struggling, when they don't have money coming in and they need to sell, you, the consumer, are going to benefit because they need to incentivize you to sell more. And again, same exact thing with the interest rates, guys. We talked about it. When the economy is doing bad, interest rates are better because they are incentivizing you. Please, please, we want your loans. We want your money. Please come. So although the tariffs, yes, whether they're good or bad, whether they put a weight on us, regardless of what that means, and we said this during our recession episode, if you have been preparing, if you have been saving, if you are ready, this period of time could be a really good opportunity for you to capitalize. And that's ultimately why we went on the tariff conversation. This, what we just did right here, this is legitimately the entire experience of the American population right now.
100%.
100%.
And so, at the end of the day, if you know who I am, I'm Switzerland.
Yeah, exactly.
I was heating this guy up because it is...
But it is
viable
it's
questions.
It's an example. Yeah.
It's viable questions.
Absolutely.
What's out there. You got to ask these questions. And at the end of the day, new construction, get a realtor.
Yep.
Resale, get a realtor. It's only going to benefit you in the long run.
I love
run.
It. All right. So let's move on to our Run Rock takeaway for today's episode. Who wants to take it?
I'll take it.
Go for it.
I think if you're a seller, you are going to face less competition from new builds in the next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if you've been looking at listing, you're going to have to, and in Colorado specifically, right? Because if you look at new construction across the United States, there's different pockets that have new home starts. And the West is like, we're up 2% from last year. But the biggest gripe has been, if I'm a seller, I'm competing against new builds that are giving me 3.5%.
Mm-hmm.
As those profit margins shrink, as those new construction homes get more expensive, I think the seller of resale homes, you guys are going to have a little bit more power and a little bit more influence throughout the rest of 2025.
Mm-hmm. I'll piggyback on that. If your realtor is pushing new construction, that means they're tired of incentivizing you, the consumer, and they're starting to incentivize us. So we look at that as one, we're trying to pay us more money, but it's not going to come out of your pocket.
Right.
That means we could come in and negotiate the hell out of it to really benefit you at the end of the day. So come talk to us because we're seeing the after ripple effects that are going to benefit you because they can only incentivize you so much. And they're like, well, who else has the general public's eye? Us, the realtors. I'm not going to take you into a new construction if it's going to tank you.
Yep.
It's just not who I am. But if they're like, let me incentivize this realtor, and then I'm going to go in and ask questions, be like, okay, I know they're hurting. Let me bring in the consumer and see how we can, get you a better deal.
And I'm gonna piggyback on the piggyback, but I'm going to play devil's advocate. And what I mean by that is this is a phenomenal time for you as a consumer
to get involved. Start understanding finances, start understanding interest rates, start understanding incentives, stuff like that. Because the more you know how the world around you is going to affect the situation that you're in, the better you will capitalize, whether you're just a consumer walking into a new build home. Because if you know, hey, you watch this, I watch Real Estate Served on the Rocks, and I know that you guys are going to be, you guys are hurting here. What does that look like to you? Guys, they have to answer you. Mm-hmm. Like they can't say no.
The sales rep's gonna be like, "Oh, we're not."
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Bring in an agent.
Yeah. Or again, a great example. Go experience it yourself, and then if you don't think that you're getting it, call an agent and be like, "Hey, what is this looking like? Can you get some information?" Because they will talk to an agent differently than they will talk to you as a consumer. Again, they're concerned about their bottom line. So just use this as an opportunity to educate yourselves and know what's going on. Watch more podcasts like us. Learn more as much as you can, because you're only going to benefit in this period of whether we go into recession or a down period. You, the consumer, will benefit with the more knowledge that you have. Oh, all right. All right. Whew. I will say this was a perfect bourbon for this episode.
Yeah, man. I was going to have half a pour. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move into the bourbon review for today's episode. And on today's episode, just as a recap, we are drinking 13th Century. They are a Colorado-based distillery. This that we're drinking is an American single malt whiskey, and it sits right around 130 proof, 65%. I'm going to give it to you guys. What, you guys both had a pour. Did it change for you between pour one, pour two?
It did?
Mm-hmm. Oscar?
Yes, but my opinion did not.
Okay.
The sweetness came out.
Okay.
But I will say this, the char and the burn, like the ethanol portion, mm-hmm. stayed.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, and we've talked about this before, if it's a good bourbon and it stays open, if you get more complexity, but you still get the hair on your chest feel throughout the entire thing, that is a well-made bourbon.
Yep.
And I think the fact that they went 100% malt barley mm-hmm. with this proof, with that amount of char, I'm going a very, very solid 2.
Really?
Yep.
You're gonna go as high as a 2?
I'm gonna go as high as a 2. Okay. Yeah.
Oscar, what do you think?
I am going to rate it before I even know the price, because I'm big on consumer mm-hmm. advocacy, right?
And just
trash
but everybody's listening and watching. Just remember what I said at the beginning of the episode about Oscar liking this. Go for it.
This bourbon's right up my alley. flavor profile, the burn, everything. It held strong. I didn't give it a lot of time to open up. Maybe I should taste that one. It just was really good. I don't even know the price, and at this point, I don't care. This is one of the things that this is one of those things that, you know, I always talk to my clients on what is stress and
I don't even care.
Yeah, what is stress? You can't put money on a few things in life, and taste is probably one of them, unless it's stupid, right? I'm not going to pay $1,000 for something that tastes really good, but if this is within budget of maybe less than,
it doesn't matter. You said the price.
It doesn't matter.
So just say
it would really start irking me if it was more than $250 or $300.
So just go for it.
Man, this held strong. It's right up there for me. I gave it a solid 1.25.
Yeah,
I think that's the highest I've mm-hmm. scored anything. It was just really, really good. The way I rated it is I there was really nothing that I could nitpick that I could say this.
No, yeah,
it was gross. Mm-hmm.
I am going to be right there with you. I'm going 1.5 on this guy. 1.4, 1.5. I know it's a whiskey, not a bourbon, but the complexity of it.
Yeah.
Just the way that it opened, the way that it stayed, the burn was there and it stayed. Can't beat it. JC's glass. Oh my God.
Easily.
Shut up. Let me see.
Holy shit.
Easily top five.
You thought the nose 100%. Was good there?
Easily top five.
Yeah.
Easily top five.
100%.
Yeah. Easily top five. Dude. That's been sitting open.
Yeah, just it doesn't.
Nothing but flavor.
Throw your nose in there.
Nothing but flavor.
You know what? 13th Century, well done.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Now, if you tell me this is a $1,000 bottle, I'd be like,
anywhere between $100 and $150.
All day.
And you could come here to the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, get a pour of this
guy. I would
take
it because the Heaven Hill grain of glass is like $125.
Mm-hmm.
And we rate that one of the highest we have.
Exactly. Yep, this I one agree. Here. You can come here, have this at the Rouge for anywhere between $28 and $35 a pour.
I would definitely come try it.
Yeah,
it is really good. It's a wild. Different. It's a different animal.
It's fantastic.
Wild. It is. It is very.
I want to taste it.
It is fantastic.
It held its complexity. I know, right?
Holy shit!
It's a different.
How do you get sugars out of something that has?
Hold on.
It's a completely different.
Okay,
bourbon.
So JC's glass sits up here, dude.
I'll drink that with dinner.
I'm at a 1.25 after
day.
That one.
Right? Do you sip this?
No, I smelled
No, sip it.
It's dude. Something you could even. Dude, I'm very picky on whatever spirit. I don't really drink when I eat.
Dude,
and I could sip this with the dinner.
That is crazy. 100%. If you drink this, you get this bottle.
So, you know
put a drop or two of water in it if you don't want to wait and let it open. Because this sitting here for
the
an
sour.
Hour, oh my god!
At the tongue disappeared, and it went all charred oak.
This is hands down across the board the highest rated.
Yeah,
highest
this
rated
is,
spirit that we've
this
had.
This is
1.5.
Everybody watch Willy Wonka.
Yeah. I'm at a 1.5.
Mm-hmm. When she puts that chewing gum in her mouth, that's supposed to be a full course meal. And you're like, I could taste the gravy and the. That's this. It's like you're drinking and you're like, oh my god,
that's incredible.
Good.
That is incredible. Wow.
This all isn't right. just. Look past the alcohol burn. Look
no,
at
that's a one no.
look past.
That's
it's yeah. good. It's mm-hmm. a good spirit. It's yes. a damn whiskey. It's not a bourbon.
We got
I'm a high bourbon.
Is that
guy.
The only bottle he
this
has?
This is delicious. Mm-hmm.
I'm because so this is actually gifted to Chris.
Fuck. So, I want to buy it. Right?
Me too.
I'm saying. So no, this is phenomenal. So we got a 1.5, a 1.4, and
1.25,
or 1.25.
So we're at like a
1.3 average.
1.3 average.
Yeah,
this is
average.
A damn good bottle.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
I'd pay $30 for a pour.
Yeah.
Oh, when you buy something super flavorful, let's call it a Midori's Melon.
Yeah.
It's. To the taste, it tastes good, but then you have that after kind of ugh, and then you're like, I'm gonna have a hangover. Yeah. This is pure refined spirits with that same enjoyment.
Yep.
Man, that's a good damn spirit.
All right, Oscar, where can they find you?
Oscar the Realtor, OscarTheRealtorCO.com.
Find me at Charlie Sardelli, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook.
I'll be in Costa Rica.
Jesus, where'd you call fucking arguing about the tariffs? God damn, I wish I was in Costa Rica. I talk all this shit, but I can't go to Costa Rica right now.
The Colorado real estate guy, why could you not go to Costa Rica?
Do you have a big enough suitcase? Because I need to be a stowaway right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's, yeah.
I got tariffs to pay for, fucker.
I love it. I love it. On that note, guys, you can always reach out to all three of us. Any questions that you have, leave a comment, subscribe to the channel, whatever it may be. But you can reach out to us, RESOTR at themilehighperspective.com. Give us a phone call or a text.
720-584-3361. Also, we don't know anything about Binance. Stop asking us.
I know a little about crypto, not enough to tell you. But
on that note, guys, phenomenal episode.
Cheers.
Hey,
cheers.
Fucking fantastic. General public, thank you. Much love. Thanks for following us.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere that you listen to podcasts. To catch our video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective. And to keep up to date with everything going on at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, visit their website, therougewinebar.com.